Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashlyn Dave, your host. We've got a great show lined up, so let's get started. All right, thanks for downloading the podcast. This is Ashlyn Dave, and this is the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, episode 134, week ending July 15th, 2011. And I got a kind of an interesting show this week. I'm going to talk a little bit about the sub-5-hour marathoner. And that means the sub-5-hour marathoner or marathoners are those who run between 4 and 5 hours. If you're if you run under 4:30, you could call yourself a sub-4:30 marathoner. It seems that the 4 to 5-hour marathoner gets little to no respect out there in the marathoning community, I guess that's kind of a general statement. And I'm going to give a couple examples of that because I fall into the category of between 4 and 5 hours. I've never run anything better than 4 hours, and I don't know if I'll ever be able to or not. I'm not sure. And then, I'm going to hit on a couple other things, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about my friend Shannon Rivera, who is a sub-5-hour marathoner. Matter of fact, she is a sub-4:20 marathoner now. And I'm just going to share a little bit of her story. It's not remarkable in the sense that, you're going to start crying or anything after you hear it, but it's remarkable in the sense that how persistence and determination will knock a lot of time off your off your finishing time of the marathon. And so that's why I want to share that story with her. And it's well overdue. She provided me the information several months back, and finally I'm putting that into a podcast. So Shannon, hopefully you'll enjoy hearing about your story, and that'll be towards the end of the show. My training update: I've still struggling with getting to regular 5-hour or 5-mile runs. The humidity here in Virginia has been pretty brutal here lately, and with high temperatures, heat index, over 100 degrees, and it's just difficult to get out there and run with any real motivation. I'm putting down probably 15 miles or less a week, and I just can't seem to get the motivation to get out there more often than every couple days. And I guess I did a 4-miler this morning, and I just had to cut it short because it was just so hot. And, it doesn't matter what kind of wicking clothing that you wear, because everything just sticks to you. It's that kind of heat and humidity. There's no breeze. There's no air moving around at all. And it's just brutally hot and not really that enjoyable. What I should have done was gone over to the YMCA and run up on the indoor track. There's now two indoor tracks in the center of the universe, and one is at the Randolph-Macon College Brock Center. That's 1/10 of a mile, so 10 laps is a mile. And then the new YMCA addition, which is very nice, has an indoor track, which is the same. I just haven't been over there yet. So I probably should have done that, although the word is that it's hot upstairs in the YMCA. And that's another reason why I don't like running on the treadmill over there, because of the heat. When they built that, for some reason, that the airflow just doesn't quite work right. So I'm still struggling to get out there. But what I did last Thursday on July 7th was I ran a 5K race in the evening, which was out at Patrick Henry High School, just west of Ashland in Hanover. It was called the Patriots 5K, and it was to raise money for their cross-country team, as well as kind of raise awareness for epilepsy, because one of the members of the cross-country team has epilepsy. However, she's quite a competitor. I wish I could remember her name at the moment. I actually know her mom. I just can't remember her name, but her last name is Richardson. I think it's I can't think of it at the moment. But she's a high school student, and she helped put the race together, and they had some pretty decent race swag. Like a aluminum water bottle, plastic cups, pencils. I didn't register early enough to get a shirt. They had a kids mile, which my daughter did, and then they had the 5K for whoever else wanted to do that. So I signed up for that. My dad came out and cheered us on, and I ran pretty good for a 5K in 95 degrees. I ran 28:13, which was good for a 904 overall pace. And it was it wasn't a road course. It was through the woods, kind of rolling hills through an area called Poor Farm Park, which was the former start and finish of the Patrick Henry Half Marathon. And I went out a little fast and just kind of maintained it. And for those of you that listen to the podcast on a regular basis, and if you know what my pace, my regular pace is, 9 minute miles is fast for me. I'm usually a 10 to a 10:20, 10:30 minute mile. And so 9 was pretty fast. But once I started out with that, I just kind of held on to it. And would you believe that was good for second place in my age group, which was the 40 to 44. I was just totally amazed when I saw the race results. I didn't stick around. I didn't think they would really have anything. And as I was looking at, I really don't want to know how many people were in my age group, which I think might have just been 3. But anyway, my finishing time was good for second in my age group. And I think that's the first time that that's ever happened to me. So I was pretty happy to see that. It's kind of cool to see your name up there. And there was a 7 minute difference between me and the first place person. So there's no way I would have gotten first in the age group. But it was a pretty good race. When I was looking around at the people at the start, you know, you kind of want to get an idea of who some of your age group competitors are. And I guess there's some people there that I guess are younger than me. I thought they were maybe around the same age. And you can't really tell that much, you know, between people between maybe 35 and 42 or 43. Sometimes you can't really tell what their age is compared to yourself. So anyways, very pleased about that. And what I'm also hoping to do is do the second cul-de-sac series next Monday on the 18th, which is a second of a three race series on consecutive Mondays, which I've talked about before. It's called the cul-de-sac series. Rodney, my bud, did the one last week with his son, and they said it was real hot, but they had a great time, and so I'm hoping to get out there Monday. They're pretty cheap. I think it's only $15 to get out there, and then on the last night they have pizza, and it's a kind of a social thing, and it's overall a real good event, and it's put on by the Richwood Roadrunners. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about the sub-5-hour marathoner. The reason that I had this idea for the podcast was because over the last week or so, I've spent a considerable amount of time going through different running magazines, and the reason for that is because I have some one of my friends, Tom, who listens to the show and I've talked about before, he's kind enough to hand me down his old running magazines when he's done with them. So because I don't subscribe to any running magazines other than Marathon and Beyond, which is a bi-monthly, every other month, I guess that's bi-monthly publication, and that has more stories of people's running and ultra running. Runner's World is not something I subscribe to because I'm fortunate enough to get these old issues from mainly my dad, who subscribes to it, and then from time to time, Tom will give me some old issues as well as some trail magazines, and so it's really cool to get those. And I don't want to say that I don't subscribe because I can rely on these other people to hand them down to me. If they didn't give me the magazines, it would be okay. I would probably look at Runner's World at the library. But as I went through these magazines and you know, read the articles that interested me about people that do the longer distance running, it always seems that at the end of the article, if it's about marathoning, it always seems at the end of the article, if the person's a 3:30 marathoner or around that, they always have to put that in there in kind of their byline down at the bottom. And you never see anybody write an article or submit anything that runs over a 4-hour marathon. So it seems that that's the standard where you're, and I'm just making generalizations because it's my podcast and I can kind of run my mouth and do this rant. And whether you agree or not is, you know, you can send me an email at ashlanddave@gmail.com if you think I'm wrong. And, you know, we can have a friendly little debate about it. But it just seems to me that the sub-5-hour marathoner, that is the marathoner that runs between 4 and 5 hours, is of no consequence. And the reason that kind of, you know, pulls at me, you know, gets me a little bit is because that's who I am. That's what I do. I can't run under 4 hours. I've run, I guess, 11 or 12 road marathons, something like that, 17, and including my ultras, I've run 17 races of the marathon distance or beyond, and I'm not going to get under 4 hours. I'm a 215-pound dude. I'm 6 feet tall. 10-minute miles is about as fast as I can run over the course of or less, actually more than that. I can't even maintain that for 26.2 miles. That's why I had to get to a walk run. And I guess one of the I don't really know where I'm going with this, but it just seems that, there's so many people in the population that fall in that category yet and that have remarkable stories about perseverance and determination and comebacks that really you're never going to see that in Runner's World. Now, the editor-in-chief of Runner's World, David Willey, has a editor's letter in the August 2011 issue that if you read it over as a whole, he's just sharing his, when he runs a marathon competitively, he doesn't seem to enjoy being out there. And the thing that kind of got me was the last sentence of the editor's letter where it says, he's talking about the Big Sur, I think that's Big Sur International Marathon in California, and sounds like he's a 320 is his Boston qualifier, which is, I guess, the gold standard, which is now you got to be faster than, I guess, 5 minutes faster than it was last year. And what happened was he talked about in 2007, well, let me just go back a little bit farther up in the letter. He talked about how he ran a 407 in Chicago, ran a 349 in Richmond in 2009, and just kind of dismissed those. And then he said he ran the Big Sur, was his most enjoyable marathon ever, and at 358, it wasn't even my slowest. So it must have been something in the air. And so what he's saying there is that at 358, he's even calling that a slow marathon. And what happens when somebody writes something like that, that kind of turns me off, because I would love to have a 358. Hell, I'd even love to have a 407. With my PR is 4:17:37. In case you're wondering, that's the fastest I've ever run one. That was the Lower Potomac River Marathon in 2009, I think, in March of 2009. So what happens I read this. I always read his letter when I get the Runner's World passed on to me, and I just feel like the people that run the 4:17, the 4:30, 4:35, the 4:20s, even the 4:10s. Are really just dismissed as not serious runners or racers. Another example I'll give is an article that was in the New York Times in October of 2010 about how the New York Times was not going to be publishing the race results for people who ran over 4.5 hours. I mean, they would still be official finishers. It's just that their results weren't going to be posted, almost as if they weren't serious racers. And so my question is, and it's just kind of a rhetorical question, is who decides that? Do the sub-3-hour or sub-4-hour marathoners, are they the ones that decide, where the cutoff should be? Because there's nothing in history that says, what you should run the marathon in. There's a world record. There's the Boston qualifying standard. But that's just one city that sets the tone. I mean, there's... race directors, they wouldn't be able to put on these races if you didn't have the whole second half of the pack, the people that run over 4 hours. You wouldn't be able to, and I'm not talking about Boston, I'm talking about other events. You wouldn't be able to put on these huge events if you didn't have the revenue from all these people. And so my, I would suggest if you're, for those serious runners, just enter in events that, why not have an event that's just for sub-3-hour marathoners, period. Let you compete against each other, and I still don't understand how me running a 4:30 marathon does anything to diminish the experience of the person that runs a 3:15, because they're never going to see me on the course, and I'm never going to see them. I don't understand how that affects. They're going to be a different corral. They're going to start before I am. I don't even know how. They don't even know I exist. I mean, I've always said I'm an ordinary, middle of the pack, regular runner. Ordinary person trying to do something extraordinary, and as long as the marathons are open and there's the cutoff is something that I can make, I'm going to enter it if it's one that I want to do, and I'm not going to get in the way of anybody who's trying to qualify for Boston or anybody who's a more of a serious runner. And I still don't think there's anything wrong with recreational runners entering marathon races if they want to demonstrate what their endurance is. And while I'm on that subject, I would actually even argue that the 4.5 hour marathoner who runs a 10:18 minute mile for 4.5 hours, which is that's what the 4.5 hour pace is, a 10:18 mile, may even have more endurance than the person that runs the 3:15 marathon. Whereas the 3:15 marathoner probably has more speed, but I'm not so sure that they could maintain the pace that they're running for 4.5 hours. That would be an interesting exercise. So, you know, you have someone who's running at their top speed that they can maintain. I don't know what the pace is for a 3:15 marathon. And then you have the person that's running the 4:30 marathon who's running at their top speed, which happens to be a 10:18, if that's what they've trained for. Perhaps what they've trained at, you know, 10:20 or 10:30 miles. So on race day, 10:18 is their top speed or the most that their body can put out, because everybody's body is a little bit different. So I would argue that the 4.5 hour marathoner may even actually have more endurance than the 3:15 marathoner, whereas the 3:15 marathoner obviously has more speed over a longer distance. So it's just really, you can't really compare, in my opinion. It's not like comparing two oranges. It's kind of like a tangerine and an orange. You know, you're in the same family, but not exactly the same fruit. So I'm not really sure where I'm going with that, but just, you know, in looking at these magazines and you know, these people, I guess if you run a sub-3 hour or a sub-3:30 marathon, it gives you some higher level of credibility than if you're a 4 hour and some change marathoner. It seems to me that's what the just in general, you know, generally speaking, that's what the magazines seem to place for credibility is you have to have. And you know, maybe I'll be proven wrong. There might be an article out there somewhere that, and I know Marathon and Beyond magazine has a little bit more, or the regular Joe stuff, but you're not going to see that in Runner's World. And that's probably one reason why I don't subscribe and pay the money, is because it seems that it's for the fast people, and they have a market for that. I mean, there's millions of people that obviously can run under 3:30. And so they're not going to lose, you know, close their magazine down because I don't subscribe. And, you know, it's of no consequence, really. But it just seems to me that, you know, especially the editor here, he makes a big deal about his marathon finishing time. And it just kind of turns me off a little bit. I guess maybe because I'm jealous, you know. Maybe that's really what the bottom line is that because he's a faster runner, I don't know. He looks like he might be a pretty decent-sized dude. I can't really tell. So I know it's possible to run that fast at that size. But, you know, when he just talks about how, you know, the 3:58 wasn't even his slowest, you know, that's such a slow marathon finishing time. Well, to him it might be, but for somebody like me, you know, 3:58 would be awesome. You know, that'd be really cool. It's just, I just don't know if I'll be able to repeat that, especially because I've moved on to, I guess, more ultras. So that's kind of the rant. I needed to get that out there. I'm just... You know, I don't really enter the debate online and in these forums of, you know, marathon cutoffs. You know, if somebody wants to walk the marathon and the race director decides the cutoff is 7 hours, you know, if you don't finish in 7 hours, you get cut. That, you know, simple as that. If the marathon, it has a 5 hour cutoff, you know, if you run over 5 hours, you get cut. If the marathon has a 4 hour cutoff and you don't run 4 hours, you get cut. You know, if race directors feel that strongly about it, then, you know, make the cut if you want to have a competitive field. But you're just not going to get the revenue, and you're not going to be able to put on a large event that's going to attract attention, and that's really what these elite runners want to be in anyway, is they don't want to be in a small marathon event that does, you know, two-mile loops around a lake with just an elite field, because it's not going to bring any media attention. It's not going to, you know, bring money, prize money. The argument could go around and around and around, and I guess I've been thinking about this for a while, and I wanted to put it out in the podcast and just generate some comments if anybody feels strongly about it, one way or the other. I mean, I'm not going to start an argument via email or anything like that, but if you have anything to say one way or the other that you think what might be interesting for me to share in the podcast, you can send that at ashlanddave@gmail.com. You can also send me comments about any of the other shows at that email address as well. So with that being said, let me get into Shannon's story, because the reason I think it's remarkable is Shannon has, she's part of Team Incognito, and so I've known her for several years now, and one thing that was really cool about our running group was the internal encouragement amongst ourselves and everybody, to make everybody successful. And Shannon moved on from the half to the full marathon, and went on to get a master's degree and started coaching runners, and really did some remarkable things, you know, in the running community, in addition to knocking down her marathon time. So I'm just going to spend a few minutes sharing her story, because the reason I like it is because it encourages me to maybe run a faster marathon, because her marathon PR is just inside mine now, and so she and I have right around the same running ability, and I know what the struggle is. So let me talk a little bit about her story, and then we'll comment some more on it. Now, Shannon first came to be a member of Team Incognito when another member of our running group named Michelle kind of brought her in, and this was before we set up such a strict criteria to get in Team Incognito, which we kind of made up a little silly questionnaire, you know, with no right answers, that kind of thing. But Shannon actually started running more seriously in 2006, and that was to train for a half. And that was the same year that I ran my first marathon, and that was the first year that Team Incognito came together as a grassroots fall marathon training program for the Richmond Marathon in the fall of 2006. Shannon, at that time, she said she never would have ever thought that she would be able to run a full marathon. But in 2008, with encouragement of some friends, which she referenced as a Team Incognito, she decided to train for her first full marathon. And she signed up for the Sports Backers training team to train for the 2008 Marine Corps Marathon. The Sports Backers training team is a program here in Richmond that is put on by an organization called Richmond Sports Backers. Richmond Sports Backers has their hand in a lot of different things in the Richmond area, from track meets to cross-country events to, you know, stuff on the river, you know, many, you know, three-on-three basketball tournaments. Running most of the running events they're involved with. Matter of fact, they put on the Monument Avenue 10K, which has got 35,000 plus runners in it. And so they do a marathon training team called MTT with of all levels. So, you know, a lot of people have gotten into marathoning and finishing based on the fact that Richmond has a 7-hour cutoff, and it's a great, you know, endurance running is a great fitness. So that's what Shannon signed up for in 2008, and she followed the training guide to a T. She did all the hills, all the speed work, and then when she lined up for the starting line of the Marine Corps Marathon, she felt more than prepared to run the race. She ran it, felt real good about it, but was unable to meet her time goal, which was to break four and a half hours, because she wanted to beat Oprah Winfrey's finishing time, which I can't remember what it was, but I know I've beaten it now. She ran 4:32, which I think is great. She didn't want to get discouraged, but she was a little upset, especially after all the work that she put into it. So she decided to run the Richmond Marathon 3 weeks later. Now, being a marathon newbie, I personally wouldn't have advised that, but she did that herself, and she had a very bad experience. The race did not go well. It was really hot and humid for November of that year. Matter of fact, I'm wondering if I ran November. I think I spectated that year. I think I was glad that I didn't run. She wasn't well hydrated, and then she ended up hitting the wall around mile 13 and just majorly struggled to the finish, and finished in just under 5 hours, and that did not do a lot for her marathon confidence. But what Shannon did was the next spring, which would be the spring of 2009, she decided to start training again for the Marine Corps Marathon, mainly because she thinks it's a wonderful race, and her husband, who was active duty Army, decided to train with her, but this time she didn't follow the training plan. She managed to get in most of the runs, some of the hills, didn't do everything, but actually had, and she had done some half, several half marathons in between there, so she actually got involved in helping to coordinate and coach the Sports Backers half marathon training team. So Sports Backers then developed that. Shannon got involved with that with our other guy in Team Incognito named John King. I'm not sure he listens. I don't think he listens to the podcast, but I went down to Florida with him and ran the Keys Ultra. So she had to adjust her training around the half marathon training team on the weekends, which sometimes was a challenge. So when she got to the race, she said she felt adequately prepared, but not as prepared as the year before. And she and her husband started together. They also managed to finish together, which she said was a very difficult task with 30,000 runners. Unfortunately, Shannon's husband started to hurt at mile 20, so they slowed the pace down and came in, didn't break 4:30, but came in at 4:36, which I still think is pretty remarkable. And then in November of 2009, she decided, which I think is going to be, I think that's actually going to be November of 2010 because she put in her email 2009, but I think it's 2010 because I looked up her finishing time. She wanted to run a marathon in her home state of Minnesota, and she thought that the Twin Cities Marathon would be a perfect marathon for that. I don't know the actual date of it, but the course goes from Minneapolis to St. Paul. Apparently it's not as difficult as the Grandma's Marathon in Duluth, which I'm not that familiar with. Shannon was still coaching two half marathon teams. One was in the spring and the summer, and then one was in the summer fall. So she had to set up her training schedule totally around those schedules. She said she got in all the long runs except for the last 20, but was not very consistent at all with her weekly runs. She said she got them in when she could, but things in life just kind of create a lot of roadblocks. And I do believe that it was at this time that she was finishing up her master's degree, and I think working full time and possibly in school full time. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how she did all that. She started doing Pilates about 8 weeks before the race, and she thought that that really helped her some with her core strength. She had several bad dreams before the race about it. She was very worried that she wasn't prepared to run. She figured that her long runs would at least get her across the finish line, but she never thought about cutting her time at all. She just wanted to run it and have fun. She said she didn't think about anything at all. She had a watch on, but she never checked it. And just ran and enjoyed the scenery and the crowd. And she had family members along the course cheering her on. And she didn't stress over pace or anything else. And believe it or not, she ran 4:16:16, which is awesome. And I think there's a lesson there for all of us. So that, you know, we stress over pace times. Oh, by the way, that's a 9:47 pace overall average. I think there's something to be learned for that. And I'm going to draw on one of my own experiences there. And Shannon, it's a remarkable story, and I really appreciate you sharing that. I mean, basically, she took off, 16 minutes off of previous marathon times just by relaxing and having fun. Same thing happened to me when I ran my PR marathon. I was actually experimenting with a run-walk method, totally relaxed, and I was actually training for the Strolling Gym 40-mile ultra. And that's when I ran my fastest marathon time. So I really think there's something to be said for that. It's very hard to do if that's your first marathon, because you're gonna be tense. You're gonna have anxiety. You're gonna have this time goal that you have in your head that you think that you should be able to run based on your training. And so do your first one and do all that. You know, get it out of the way. If you don't have a good experience with your first marathon, your second will be better if you pick a good race, and if you just relax and go out there and have fun and do your training, you got to do your homework, you're probably going to do better than you think you will. And Shannon's story is a perfect example of that. And I wish her the best. And we're having a Team Incognito cookout coming up, and I don't think she's going to be able to make that. But, I love talking about marathoning, and it's just, hearing stories like that on someone that, you know, with some additional training and commitment and following a solid training program could actually, you know, take a lot more time off their marathon if able. The problem I have is that I just don't have the time to put in more. I don't have more time to put in. I actually do put in more time, come to think of it, because I, you know, running the longer training runs when I get ready for ultras. But I don't know. I wanted to include her story in there because I've been carrying that a while in my email inbox, and I definitely want to share that with everybody. So, Shannon, there it is. I'll make sure I let you know that this show's coming out so you can listen to it. We did get some emails this week. Me here, all of us here at the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast staff. And let's get to the email bag section of the show and see who checked in this week. All right, Dr. Smitty checked in. And as I've mentioned before, Dr. Smitty is doing a fat-ass 40-miler on July 23rd in Chesapeake, and that's going to be at Oak Grove Lake Park, which is off of Battlefield Boulevard South in Chesapeake, Virginia. And he's starting that at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I'm actually going to drive down there and join him. I'm not going to be doing the full 40 miles, obviously. I could probably manage 10 with a little bit of walking in there, but fortunately it's a mile and a half loop around the lake, so I'll probably join him intermittently. Is that a word? Intermittently, I can't even pronounce it. What I'm going to do is drive down that morning and probably join him around lunchtime and encourage him to get hit to the 40-mile point for to celebrate his 40th birthday. And afterwards, we will enjoy some adult beverages. All are welcome. Just head on down there. If you need further directions, just email me at ashlanddave@gmail.com. It's a little bit time sensitive, though. It's July 23rd, so that'd be a week from, I guess, this coming Saturday. And I know some people don't download the podcast right away. So anyway, all the best to Dr. Smitty. Good to hear from him. And Greg, we'll look forward to seeing you down there coming up on the 23rd. I also heard from Leslie out of Memphis, Tennessee. And she just had a question about the cool bandana that I used during the Florida Ultra race. And that's called a cool bandana, which I let her know. I got it from Zombie Runner. It worked pretty good. What it is a chamois that's sewn into a larger bandana that you soak in cold water and it stays cool on your neck. Got that from Zombie Runner. If you put that in a search engine, surely you'll find it. Leslie didn't say how long she's been listening to the podcast, but she's originally from the Midwest, has lived in Michigan and Wisconsin, and then followed her husband in North Carolina, and he's in law school, and right now they're in Memphis, Tennessee. So Leslie, thanks for checking in. It's always good to hear from listeners, and hopefully you'll check out one of those cool bandanas, and it'll work as good for you as it did for me. As a matter of fact, I used it yesterday because it was so hot out. And although I could only manage 4 miles because the humidity was so awful, I did have something cool around my neck. And without it, I probably would have only been able to run 10 feet. So thanks for checking in. Good to hear from you. Also heard from Abuelo out of the Chattanooga area. And he and another guy, Chris, out of Georgia, actually let me know that the podcast had a mistake in it. It actually was cut off, and I was able to fix that. That was episode 133, so I appreciate you guys letting me know about that. I was able to fix that. Abuelo actually just completed the 24th Peachtree Road Race, which is the largest 10K in the country. That was on July 4th down in Atlanta, and that is an Atlanta institution from what I understand. Abuelo said that his wife, two sons, oldest daughter, her husband, and then his dad also, which was his 21st road race, also ran and finished it, and it's become a family tradition. So well done, Abuelo. And wow, that is to do something for 24 years is really something. I'm on a 4-year streak. I've done the Patrick Henry Half Marathon for 4 years in a row. I'm going to do it for the fifth year. I think it's the fifth year, this coming late August. And I started running that race at its inception, so I plan to stick with it. I don't care how long it takes me. I'm going to get through that 13.1 miles. And I'll talk more about that race as it gets closer because the course is being changed this year. And Abuelo always likes to sing along with the Star Spangled Banner. So it's a true patriot there. And thanks again for listening to the podcast. Always good to hear from you. I also heard from Chris out of Atlanta. And he's got his own blog, which I think is Running After Daylight. And he also clued me in that the podcast had been cut off. So, Chris, I really do appreciate that. That shows that there are people that are listening all the way to the end, and sometimes I do wonder if people do. Let's see. Heard from Dirt Dog out of Dirt Dog's Running Diatribe podcast. And he commented on the last show where I talked about the fear of missing out. And I want to just read his email because it kind of summarized what I was trying to say. Dave, listen to your latest this morning on the run and glad to hear you back on the roads. I think that the whole idea of FOMO, which means fear of missing out, has gained momentum thanks or not in large part to the rise in use of social media. You see and read so many people doing epic things, it's hard not to feel sometimes that you are missing out. However, you and I have been at this running thing long enough that it's been intertwined with ourselves, and we ride the ebb and flow that our running brings to us. Not every run is going to be epic, but the journey over the years has been. It's why I know that even if all social media went away, that you and I would still be out there moving forward. Signed, Mike. And Mike, you're absolutely right. I couldn't summarize that any better myself, and I appreciate you sending the email. And for those of you that have not listened to Mike's podcast, I would encourage you to do so. Just look up Dirt Dogs podcast, search for that, and you'll find it. It's very good. He actually interviews people, and unlike my podcast where I'm not able to find anybody that's willing to talk to me, he really has conquered the social media aspect of podcasting, and I think it's pretty cool, and I really like listening to it, so I would encourage you to do the same. Got the newsletter from the Graveyard 100, and the reason I wanted to include this in there is because it is now official that the Graveyard 100 is going to include a 100K option, which is freaky crazy because I'm actually considering doing it, like I've already mentioned. That is March of 2012, and I don't know, after the difficulties I had just the last few days with getting in, you know, not even a 5-mile training run, I really got to rethink this. But I know that training through the winter will be a lot easier for me. And I know I've done the 50 miles, so I guess I can make it. I just got to figure out what to do about the blistering. I'll have to do a little bit more reading up on taping. And maybe because if it's not so hot, I wouldn't have the heat in my shoes. You know, that deadly triangle, heat, moisture, and friction, which is just deadly to feet. So anyway, that's racethegraveyard.com or graveyard100.com. You can check out that race. Brandon is putting that together. And he'll be making some changes and adding more stuff to the site as it gets closer, I'm sure. All right, so that's the podcast for this week. I will see y'all again, talk to y'all again in a week or so, 10 days, maybe 2 weeks. As always, I appreciate you downloading the show. You can send comments to ashlanddave@gmail.com. If you get the podcast through iTunes feed, you can always go to the iTunes store, put in Ashland Dave. You'll find my podcast, and you can always leave a review if you want. The podcast will always be free. Like I mentioned in previous shows, I'm always looking for sponsors to offset the cost. Although the cost doesn't kill me, you know, it's something. Sometimes I would like to add perhaps something in there to make it a little bit more interesting, because then I can talk about sponsors. So this is Ashland Dave. I'm running in the center of the universe, Ashland, Virginia, reminding you to run to the finish and keep on running, and don't forget to hug your kids. Have a good week. We'll be right back.